Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Back, huh? What are the warmer days we've had so far in this 2023? Beautiful Friday. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. On this warm day, six great flavors of slushies and the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Why don't you go over, stock up now? Stock up for the weekend. Maybe go out on the deck tonight. Enjoy. Just kick back. Warm evening. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Elmo's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Nick Gordon of the Twins with a gem in the outfield.
Line switch right center field. Gordon on the run will leap and make the catch. Wow, what a catch in right center by Nick Gordon. That was a hot shot. What a terrific catch by Gordon. Full extension. Wow. Padres are taking a 3-2 lead.
The outstanding Don Orsillo, I was just in literally with my longtime friend Rick Berry. We were up in Wilkes-Barre last week together. Rick gave the commencement speech at Penn State Wilkes-Barre. Successful career, life, was able to relate all that in the commencement speech. And I was out up there with him to spend some time with Rick and Sue, and then the two of us spoke together on Friday last week there. And we were done. We were walking back to the car, and we were talking about it because, you know, Rick has a long-time association with the San Diego Padres. And he said to me, he says, what do you think of Don Orsillo? And I said, Don Orsillo is one of the best I've ever heard, ever. And he looks at me and goes, oh, I feel the same way. He and Mark Grant, what a team. You know, even though Rick does live up in the Bay Area, so they've got Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko. And he says, I still think they're the best. He says, but boy, Orsillo and Grant are right behind him. And, you know, and he's right on both counts, by the way. Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko are outstanding together. And Don Orsillo and Mark Grant are a fabulous team. Well, you're lucky in Philadelphia. You have a great broadcaster like Tommy McCarthy. And you're really lucky in Philadelphia to have a great radio voice in Scott Fransky. I think he is just one of the best in the business, and it's always great to catch up with him. Scott, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Scott, let's start with this. How remarkable has it been just to see Bryce Harper back in the lineup and maybe doing a couple things he's done so far?
Yeah, pretty amazing. I mean, when you consider everything that not only he's gone through, but how he got to this point, you know, no rehab, no spring training. I mean, just really remarkable. That it just goes to show you what a great hitter he is, that he can get to this point to face big league pitching live in a game that matters and perform. He's just a tremendous athlete. He's unbelievable.
Well, you know what? To me, he defines what a star is, because he's all about making sure he's there to get out in front of people and play. He thinks about the person in the upper deck, that it's the only game they might go to all season. If he's not out there, he feels like he's let them down. Is that how you see him?
Oh, I think he definitely feels a responsibility to try to be there every day, not only for the fans, but also for his teammates and for the organization. I mean, obviously, the club has invested a lot of time and money into him, and he feels like it's his job to sort of pay that back in a way, you know, and part of that is again, trying to be there as many days as possible throughout the year, you know, as many as physically possible. And, you know, I think that's part of what he's doing right now.
Scary part has always been with this team, the bullpen, and when it's worked, it's worked, and when it hasn't, it hasn't. What are you seeing with the makeup of this bullpen now, and can Strom help that situation by the move back to the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first question there, the makeup of it, I mean, I think it's still made up of a lot of really good pieces. And yes, they've individually had ups and downs. You know, a guy like Sir Anthony Dominguez has tremendous ability, and when he's on, he's on. He got off to a really slow start, and, you know, like any reliever, you're going to have bumps along the way. So every time there's a little bit of a bump, you wonder, oh, is he going back to where he, you know, started? But I think the biggest thing that helps the bullpen is the starters being better. It's not necessarily Strom joining their ranks, but, I mean, he'll be a valuable weapon for them. But I think more than anything, it's the starters. You know, if the starters are performing well, and if the offense is doing reasonably well to put you in situations where, you know, you're not scrambling to cover down innings, if you will, right? If you're behind by five every night, you don't want to use Alvarado and Dominguez and Kimbrel. Well, that puts a lot of strain on the other guys. And then you also run the risk that if you're down five every night, the Kimbrels and Alvarados could get rusty, right? So, I mean, there's always that delicate balance of how you use your bullpen. But I think the starting pitching being consistent and getting consistently deep into the games and keeping you in games is the best medicine for a bullpen.
Well, Noah and Manoah are two guys that have been in the past been the kind of guys that could go deeper into games. What have you seen out of Noah to this point?
Interesting stuff. I mean, you know, his velocity is down.
Yes.
And it's down, you know, I mean, it's down significantly, I'd say. Everybody internally kind of continues to say they're not worried about Nola because he knows how to pitch. But if he's going to pitch at that velocity, I'm not saying he can't, because I think that he can, but he's going to have to be sharper with his command. And, you know, he won't get by on just stuff. He's going to have to, you know, be creative a little bit. And, you know, again, Nola's a smart guy. He's a competitor. He knows how to get outs. He's done this for years without, you know, you go into a particular game and changeup's not working for him. He'll go to something else. Curveball's not working for him. Maybe he throws a few more changeups. He knows how to adapt on the fly, and he knows how to change his game plan on the fly if things aren't working or if the hitters are telling him something different. So, I mean, I'd like to see a little more velocity out of him. That's just me personally. I think he'd be better there. But I think, number one, he's got to, with his stuff, he's got to be down in the zone. He's not a four-seam up-in-the-zone kind of guy. He's not Zach Wheeler, and he shouldn't try to be Zach Wheeler. He needs to be Aaron Nola.
35 games into this to this point, there's a difference between speed and pace. What do you think of the pace of the games as you watch it now?
It's good. It's, you know, I mean, the pace of it's great. I don't have any problems with it. I wish it wasn't driven by, you know, the clock and the violations and things like that, because I've said this to a few people here early in the season, and I really mean it. I really worry about it from a long-term standpoint. And as we get deeper into the season, we're going to see more moments like this. But that moment where a player hits a big home run in a big spot and a crowd wants to cheer them, as a sport, as an industry, we have to let that happen. Because that's why fans come, right? That's why they come to games. They don't want to be in that moment. They don't want it. That's the last time they want to be rushed off, right? Those are the moments they want to stay there longer. So I worry about some of that, you know, organic stuff that happens during a game being lost because of the clock. Yes, the pace is crisper. I feel like there's more stuff going on. I do think they could probably add a few seconds to the clock, but my bigger concern is that we lose out on some of those other moments that make the sport so great.
Yeah, to me, it's a feel for the game, and if you're running the show, and I'm talking about Major League Baseball, I think it's not a good look when the Phillies have to request that Bryce Harper get time before his first at-bat at home. Now, to their credit, they granted it, but Cody Bellinger with the Cubs goes into Los Angeles and he got called for a strike when the fans gave him a standing ovation. I think you have to have a feel for it, Scott. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think you're absolutely right. They have to have a feel for it. The trouble becomes when you create situations for particular players, right? The Phillies talked about getting a little extra time so Bryce could put the elbow guard on, and they were pretty adamant about saying we're not going to make individual rules for individual players, and I agree with that. They can't. But but I think you also have to take into consideration the safety issue. I mean, if there's an equipment malfunction for a catcher, shin guard comes loose, chest protector doesn't work right, pitch comm doesn't work right, the umpire is within his right to stop the clock and let that be taken care of because that's a safety issue. Well, this is the same thing. The elbow guard for Harper, it's the same thing. The slippery slope becomes if you leave it in the hands of an umpire, right? Hypothetically speaking, third inning of a game, and something happens and the crowd's reacting and they want, extra time, the umpire grants it, right? And that gives the pitcher extra time to get ready to throw his next pitch. Well, then later in the game, the other team wants the same courtesy, and they don't get it. Then you're in that slippery slope like, well, why don't we get it? They got it, right? Now when you talk about feel and you don't have a hard and fast rule. So I hate that the game got to this point where they felt like they needed the clock. I don't know. Maybe in a few years we'll all just embrace it and it'll be fine. And I mean, I talked to a lot of people up here in the press level. They love it. So, and it ain't going away.
The one thing I've heard about the clock, though, Scott, is that I think the pitchers would like it to be 20 no matter what, and not 15 when there's nobody on base. Your thoughts on that, and do you have any concerns about arms because they are pitching at a greater pace?
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue that's going to start to gain more steam. I remember reading an article about that last week, and there's a lot of pitchers starting to speak out about that and starting to worry about the rate of injury and things like that. And those are things that we may not know the full context of until the end of a full season. But I will say this, that I think a lot of pitchers feel like not only would 5 more seconds help, but it might even be better if they got full timeouts. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily every pitch needs more time. It's that when the critical pitch is about to happen, they get more time, right? The hitter can take a timeout. Why can't the pitcher, right?
Right.
So I think that's what a lot – like Zach Wheeler doesn't generally need a lot of time between pitches. But when the game's on the line – when he's got to make a big pitch, he'd like to have a few extra seconds to think about it and to make the right pitch. So I do think that timeout idea is one that probably is not going to go away. I think that'll still be a suggestion that people, go back to here throughout the season.
Thanks so much for your time. I know you've got a lot to do for tonight. You'll be great as always, but we appreciate it.
Hey, man, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. We'll talk to you again soon.
He is one of the best in the business, without question. Scott Fransky, outstanding. He did an open last year, I think. It was the night where the Phillies had an opportunity to clinch the playoffs. And, of course, it's been a while since I've been in. He did an open that outlined everything that was beyond brilliant. And that's how he does every game. And Philly fans, you're lucky to have somebody that quality. You know what's great about Fransky? there's no question that in Philadelphia, the legendary voice of the Phillies is obviously Harry Callis. Obviously. No getting around it. Harry and Whitey Ashburn were quite the team. Andy Musser back in the day. Bill Campbell. You know, way back by some, but Harry Callis was always the guy. And you know what? Scott Fransky has just gone out and he's carved out his own deal. Where, you know what? Phillies fans are really lucky to have him. And it's not like you sit there and like, oh, he's put Harry Callis. No, he hasn't done any of that. No. He's just been gone out and he's been the best Scott Fransky he can be. He's terrific. Really, really good. Well, interesting situation happening down in Jacksonville. Now, we've talked about Beaver Stadium and renovations happening here. Well, guess what? The old Gator Bowl, TIA Bank Field, is going to get renovated. And so the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to have to find a place to play for 2 years. And not only that, the Florida-Georgia game, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Oh, I forgot you're not supposed to say that anymore. Won't be played in Jacksonville for 2 years. Well, I mean, that can be worked out. It's no problem. For the first time in a long time, Florida will play a game at Georgia, and Georgia will play a game at Florida. That's fine. And then they'll get back to the city in 2027. It's a little more difficult for the Jags. For example, when the Chargers moved from San Diego to Los Angeles, they played 2 years in Carson at Dignity Health Sports Park while waiting for SoFi Stadium to be completed. Now, Penn State practiced at Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson leading up to the Rose Bowl, but there are practice fields. They did not practice on that field and inside the stadium itself. There are practice fields down below, and that's where they practice. But Jack and I kept looking up at that place, and I remember when practice was over, we were walking up, and Jack had a car, and we were walking up to the car, and we looked at each other, started talking about, I mean, how could a team play there? An NFL team, how could they play? I said, can you believe they play there for 2 years? And he looks at me, he says, no way. Well, that's not really an option this time for the Jaguars because there's a 9,000-seat football stadium called Hodges Stadium at the University of North Florida. Well, that's out. They're not going to do that. There is the possibility of maybe playing in Gainesville at the University of Florida because Ben Hill Griffin Stadium is 90,000 seats. The question would be whether the university there has the logistics to handle 7 Florida home games and the Jaguars schedule. And remember, Jacksonville, part of that schedule will be part of it playing in London. But they do say it's worth the conversation to have. You don't want to move them out of the area. I mean, you want to keep them in the area as much as you can, but they do need to find a new place to play in 25 and 26. They'll play there this year and in 24, but in 25 and 26, yeah, we'll see what they want to do. And do you go with more than 2 games in London? It's a possibility. But, yeah, very interesting. It's just something that just came up and Jacksonville, which this year is going to play 7 games at the bank and 2 games in London because being an AFC team, they've got the the 9 home games this year. So that's an interesting one as well to look at. I mentioned the Notre Dame situation yesterday, and they have to make a decision on what to do. Under Armour is getting out of sports. They're getting out of sports. Which is interesting. Now, you know, you look at the stock prices. Nike is still up over 100. Adidas is, I don't know, 70, 80 a share. Under Armour is under 20 a share. They're just not pulling market share, and they're not pulling shares on the stock exchange either. So they're getting out of it. And guess who is the big name that has to go out and get new apparel? Notre Dame. Their Under Armour deal has come and gone. The exclusive negotiating period. Well, now they can look at Adidas. They can look at Nike. They can look at Jordan, which is a subsidiary of Nike. And let's see what kind of deal they can put together. And these apparel deals, which used to be really long, 10, 12, 15 years, not anymore. They're shorter deals across the board. All right. Next half hour, Neil Coulong. We'll talk about the NFL. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
For your years of patronage.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. We don't need to go deep into the bench like the Lakers do with Lonnie Walker to pull out a first stringer like Neil Coulong. Welcome.
Only wish I could be Lonnie Walker. What a moment, yeah. What a game. You all love that, yeah. Right? This is the thing. We don't talk about the NBA at all, but the thing you have to love about it, come May, there are always stories like this. There's always somebody. It doesn't have to be the primary guy on whatever team, but there's somebody that's going to make a string of plays, whether it's one game or in a series, and it just makes for compelling drama throughout. I love the NBA playoffs.
Oh, and that's the problem the regular season has, Neil. The playoffs are so good, and the regular season is above a flat line in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how you do this, and I've tried. Believe me, I waste a lot of time thinking about stuff like this. But if you could make, this goes for the NHL as well, but if you could make a regular season have the series feel, you know, somehow or other, however you determine, division champions and playoff seeding and everything, but if you could do it in such a way that they see each other straight for a week, you know, multiple games in that span, it brings out so many more things because the matchups that you have to play become much more apparent. And with that, you see what each team is made of in comparison to another team. And then it becomes much more competitive, in my opinion. It probably no different than you hear all the time, you know, not to mention this around Golden State, that teammates get in fights in practice and stuff like that.
Sure.
The level of competition goes up. You know, familiarity breeds contempt. I think the heat and the drama that comes with that nightly competition against the same people and not just kind of, let's, you know, fly around and go up against everybody all the time, that mentality, I don't think anyway, is really the way the game of basketball is meant to be played. I think there is far more strategy to it that doesn't become apparent because of the regular season format that they have. If they did things in series, like baseball does, you could make the argument kind of for the NFL just in the fact that they play their division as often as they do, relatively speaking. If you could do that in the NBA, I think you'd get a lot more, a lot more impact from your regular season. People would follow it more closely.
It's interesting. The NFL has the ability to dominate any cycle, any time it wants. We already know who everybody's playing. It's just the order with which they play. Thus, the schedule release. If it was not your job, would you watch it?
No. No, I'd wait to see the schedule.
Me too.
I'm not going to watch it. I mean, it's nothing to watch. I mean, the schedule comes out, and it makes sense. It's they have the means, the motive, and the opportunity to do it. Why wouldn't they?
Yep.
I get
sure.
that. Sure. There are people who will watch it because they're going to be watching something else otherwise, or they have three screens in front of them, a playoff hockey game, playoff basketball game, and a scheduled release show. There's some drama to it, but yeah, at the end of the day, I can speak with some authority on this. Fans care about how many primetime games they have and when they're playing their rivals, and maybe to an extent how many consecutive road games they have. These are kind of benchmarks that betting odds tend to increase or decrease for their team. So they're looking for that. And from there, it's what we jokingly refer to as I don't see another loss season. Everyone's going to be somewhere between 12-4 and 10-6. It's going to be a huge year for that team. Somebody is going to say they think they could go undefeated if they stay healthy. You hear it all, and things tend to kind of finish not generally too far from where they were previously. Things are pretty static in the NFL, and the league does. I don't even know if it's the league doing a great job. I think it just really leads people down the path they want to go. I think people just kind of miss the excitement. If they're not big into the NHL or the NBA, this is a great opportunity to get some of that nervous energy out before training camp starts. Before anything else goes down, you're still kind of pumped up after the draft. They'll make the bold prediction. My team's going to be 13-4. Now, I guess we have to put this into 17 games. I'm still getting used to that. It's an opportunity to view your team versus your opponents in the freshest way that they haven't been able to do. We've known who they're going to play. It's just a matter of when and how many of these games are on primetime. That's really what people are looking for.
And you're allowed a max of 6 prime times a year with a 7th possibility being flexed. The Cardinals will get 1. We'll leave it at that. And then it's just common sense. But to me, one of the keys that I look at when I do look at the scheduling, you're now allowed up to 2 Thursday games. Or I shouldn't say that. You're now allowed up to 2 short week games because I'm taking into account the Black Friday game that's going to come up this year.
Yeah, when you have that, the joke I thought of immediately when you mentioned the Cardinals was that they shouldn't even have that. But they have to expand that even more now. So national exposure is not going to be a problem. The schedule increase, they're going to keep digging after more and more. And in my opinion anyway, the battleground is in the mid-November through the end of the year when college football is not top to bottom playing regularly, because that's always been sort of the agreement. The NFL doesn't want to go after Saturdays, but when they have the opportunity to play on Saturday, you could argue in a way that is a short week game. So, or at the very least, you're losing a day. And there are situations that come up, and with the numbers involved, I've gotten a look at the process of how the schedule is put together. I can't handle it. I don't know how they do that, but there are situations where it's unavoidable. You might have to play on a Monday night and then come back and play Saturday the next week. That's a real short week. They might not classify it as such because you're not going to play on a Thursday or now a Friday, but it is much shorter than what you would normally have. And every team has to go through that. It's a question of where your bye week is, where you played the week before, and where that that Thursday game is going to be. And now you litter in the other layer of other days coming up, and the schedule is going to be completely out of whack. I mean, it's just kind of we've seen this coming. There's not going to be consistency. They're going to continue to push as much as they can. With the college football playoff expanding, they're going to dip deeper into you know, I don't know if you want to call them, you know, back to back or night and day matchups for people, but there's a lot to be said about their ability to schedule their product around or kind of in sync with the college product. And I think that makes some sense in a lot of ways. You've already got the active audience that's there. People kind of get a choice. You have a party that can bleed from one game to the other if that's what you want to do. It makes sense, but at the same time, it's like, I'm telling you, just from my perspective, you get worn out. nobody's you know, going to listen to me crying about my job, but those Saturday, Sunday, you know, all-day football binge fests, it makes you kind of hope that, you know, maybe they slow this down a little bit, but not going to happen anytime soon. They're fully expanding, and I think it's good for the game in a way. I think the players are not going to like it as much, but I would just push that argument into expanding rosters and, you know,
yeah,
not to call them scrimmages, but we'll get to a point where we're going to start talking about load management. We're going to start seeing star players missing games for one reason or another just to prepare for other games that are coming up. And the NFL really doesn't like to talk about that kind of stuff. But I don't know how else you're going to do that with the ability, with their desire to continue to expand their schedule and put the games closer and closer together. There's no way you're going to be able to avoid it.
Well, it's interesting because the 2024 college football playoff opening weekend would have one Friday night game and three on Saturday, third weekend of December. There are NFL games that are supposed to be scheduled that day. Does the NFL have to keep the college game in mind, or do they just take the attitude of, so what, we've already got it, we're just going to take it?
That's kind of what I mean. It gets to a point where that hallowed ground is going to get more and more narrow. There's just not going to be as much time. And I'm not sure, in my opinion, I'd like to hear league officials from both the NCAA and the NFL comment on this. I don't know if it really affects them that much. I don't think there are people that are going to say ardently, I refuse to watch one, I will only watch the other. There's going to be preferences for sure, but I think generally speaking, it's reasonable that you're drawing kind of from the same market. You know,
right.
Not exactly the same. Me, for example, I probably wouldn't watch a whole lot of early college playoff games. But if it's on up next to an NFL game, yeah, I'd probably tune into it. Not a huge deal. I don't think that's a huge difference for me. You wouldn't want to put them on at the same time, but I think if you've got a college game on Friday, three on Saturday, I don't think the NFL would want to put a game there, but maybe you put one on Friday, you know, to go along with everything else. Maybe, you know, the Sunday is obviously your day anyway. If there's two college games on, maybe you could put an NFL game between them or something like that. I'm sure they're discussing it. I'm sure they're working something out, but I don't think it would be as contentious of a situation. You know, I don't know if they would really mind all that much, because there comes a point. There's only 24 hours in a day, and you can only play these games in, what, like 15-ish hour window.
Right.
They're going
to
bump up against each other at some point. I think that's just inevitable. Both of them want to expand. I'm in favor of those things, generally speaking. This is just going to be kind of some of the fleas that come with that dog. You're going to have to come in direct contact with one another. But I don't think it's as big a deal as it used to be. There are so many college games. They play on so many different days of the week. People are used to it. They don't compete in a realistic sense, unless they're going head-to-head on two different networks, and that's really where the problem would come in. But it's avoidable. I think they could work their way around that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they can work a way, because I think it's good for both games, and it's good for the NFL because let's face it, college does a great job of cultivating stars before they get into the league. Bryce Young is already a known entity before he even takes a snap.
Yeah, you put it this way, too. The cross-promotion dream. You have Alabama on it at 1 p.m. Eastern, yeah. Followed by Carolina at Houston or something like that. You know, right. It just for this is a, obviously a very simple scenario, but Alabama versus Ohio State at 1, and then Carolina versus Houston at 4:30. There's a natural tie between those things. You get some symmetry in there. You can, one network probably isn't going to promote the other, but there's, you know, I think people would like that connection. It kind of draws them closer together. We all know the depth of the connection between the two. That's been unavoidable for a century. They're not ever going to get past that, and they shouldn't. But right. it's marketable. You know, there's something to be said. For me, I always like every year you'll hear it. Somebody lost a bet. You know, one guy's alma mater beat the other guy's alma mater. And he shows up right. at the media scrum wearing the jersey, that kind of thing. It's always good to see. And generally speaking, the pro players are, unless they're being paid after their pro careers are over, the pro players overall, the large majority of them are deathly loyal to their colleges. And not so much the pro teams, but the colleges.
Right, exactly, yes.
They never let go of that. And you'd like to see that sort of passion. That's kind of fun. So it's it'd be fun after a big win. Yeah, I gotta go, guys. I gotta see, you know, Penn State's playing. I gotta go check this out. I want to be able to catch the second half. That kind of thing. It humanizes a lot of things. I think it's fun. It makes for good content.
Does sequencing of games mean anything to you? Like who's back to back? How far apart teams are? Does that mean anything to you?
It's funny you say that. I was just having a conversation with somebody about this. It does, logically. The X factor, at least in the team that I watch the most, as Mike Tomlin would say, we do not care. And that's really kind of the way it goes for his teams in the second half of seasons. It doesn't matter if it's the most unrealistic schedule. You get three road games in a row, that sort of thing. They're playing their best football down the stretch. So it's like he defies those odds. But typically speaking, within a 17-game schedule, with a lot of control variables in place, divisions are very geographically aligned, and that's the teams you're playing the most often. If you have a run of one thing, you're going to have that same run at some point on the other side.
Yeah.
So if you have three road games at one point, you're probably going to have three of four at home, that sort of thing. It'll balance itself out eventually. You'll have equal opportunities for those things. That said, I think there's a competitive disadvantage if you're playing a short week game following a team that's playing on a bye, or if you've got the better's delight, the team that played Monday night before their, or the team that played Sunday, then a bye, then a Monday night game, you have that much time in between. Things can happen with that. Those are fluky, though, more than anything. And if you look at the logistics of what goes into scheduling, because it's not like the NFL stadium, the only thing they ever do is these games. There's all kinds of stuff
right.
that every stadium is running. To have to coordinate all of that with every other stadium in the league, it's a Herculean task. And it's one that, like I said earlier, it drives me nuts just looking at it. I don't know how they do that. They do a good job of balancing it. And usually the question that comes up the most with the Steelers is why the Steelers have played their week one game on the road for the last 30 years or whatever it is now.
Yeah.
To me, at this point now, it's clear and obvious the Steelers are more or less steering that, because the flip side of it is
they're asking
they tend
for
to
it.
Play their, yeah, they tend to play the last game of their season at home. I think it's kind of a trade-off they sort of like, you know. And if you think about it, that makes sense. If you want to play road game, week one makes the most sense for you because you aren't traveling from anywhere else the week before. So it's a guaranteed situation that one of your home games does not follow another, or one of your road games does not follow another road game. So you eliminate that right away. And again, you kick it down the line. more than likely your now week 18 game is going to be at home. And that tends to be what has happened for them. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure most of those years in which they start off on the road, their last game has been at home. So there's a strategic advantage to that, but obviously it's something to do, and they won't speak on this publicly, but something to do with the Pirates, how Major League Baseball is scheduling their setup. And at the same time, too, you remember, when was that? Back in after the Ravens won the Super Bowl, they had to start their season on the road because the Orioles and Ravens share parking space, and the Orioles and Major League Baseball wouldn't move their day game away from the typically the home opener is going to the Super Bowl champion. They weren't able to do that. I think the Steelers are more or less looking at that and saying, like, you know what, let's just make this work, because, I mean, come on, Pirates probably aren't going to be in a playoff race most Septembers anyway, but let's not even enter the situation if this happens to come up. We know that this will be the situation. There's a lot that comes into it. I really think it's just kind of a give and take thing. It's odd when you have three road games in a row. It's extremely beneficial to have three home games in a row. I know that. You might remember Ben Roethlisberger's what he threw, like 21 touchdown passes in three games or whatever it was.
Right.
And those were on three consecutive home games. You get more comfortable when you're staying in the same place all the time. You're not going anywhere. Teams don't tend to get that big of an advantage, but sometimes it comes up. That's sort of the thing I look for, and that does make a difference, but those are not common at all. And everybody generally faces roughly the same travel constraints as everybody else. Sometimes the East plays the West, and that's just kind of the cross you have to bear that year. And we'll see the miles traveled for everybody. Those graphics tend to pop up around now. It's always kind of fun to see. And every, I think it's like 4, 5, or 6 years, the Steelers will have the most. It depends on when their AFC/NFC West road games line up with certain places that they'll have to travel the farthest. But that's life in the NFL. It's not going to be completely fair, but it's as balanced as it's going to be.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate you.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
The great Neil Kulon. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. 6 great flavors of slushies, pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Back with you on Monday here from the Sunbury Motor Studio on News Radio 1070 WKOK.